I'm Eileen Mancera, co-chair of PE Wins Communications Committee. For those of you joining for the first time, Moments That Made Her is a production of the Private Equity Women's Investor Network, also known as PE Win. We are the preeminent organization for senior-level women investment professionals in private equity. PE Win provides its members with opportunities to network, share ideas, make deep connections with peers, and empower each other to succeed. Our mission is to increase the profile of women in private equity, and our members represent institutions with over $3 trillion in assets under management. To learn more, please visit pewin.org. The host of Moments That Made Her is Kelly Williams. Many of you know Kelly as the founding chair of PE Win, as well as the founder of the legendary private market solution business known as Customized Fund Investment Group, which she and her team grew to manage $30 billion of assets under management until she let it sail in 2014. She is the CEO of the Williams Legacy Foundation and serves on the board of Greenbrier Companies and chairs the board of the Smithsonian American Art Museum. Thank you for joining us for today's episode.
Welcome, everyone, to Moments That Made Her. I'm your host, Kelly Williams, and the founding chair of the Private Equity Women Investor Network, as well as the chief executive officer of the Williams Legacy Foundation. And I am so excited to have as my guest today, Elizabeth Hewitt, who's the chief investment officer of the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, someone I've known for a really long time, worked with in a variety of capacities, and I'm very fortunate to work very closely with her these days. But first, let me just welcome Elizabeth to our show.
Thank you, Kelly. It is a real honor to be here, and I'm thrilled to be part of the podcast. So thank you.
Great. Well, we're going to have a fun conversation, wide-ranging, I hope. I want to start first where I always start, which is to ask you to tell us a little bit about how and where you grew up.
So I grew up in Bernardsville, New Jersey. I was one of three girls, and my father was a chemist and became a perfumer. And my grandfather had actually immigrated from Ireland and served in World War II for the U.S. He had grown up on a farm in Ireland and loved farming and horses, and that's something that I love to this day, so I clearly got that from him. My mother was a first-generation college graduate, and she graduated actually from college when I was in high school, so it was always something that she had regretted not doing earlier in her life, and I think it was something that really stressed to me just how important education is and how important it was to achieve college degree.
So I was going to ask you, when you said Bernardsville, obviously that's horse country in New Jersey. And I know that you have a real passion for horses. So now I
yes.
know where that comes from.
That's right. And it was actually my father, ironically, so it was my mother's grandfather who immigrated from Ireland. But my father was the one that started us riding when we were young. Myself, I have an older sister and a younger sister. And he would bring us to the local stables, the public stables in New Jersey. And that's where I first, you know, really found my love of horses. And he was a great supporter of that for years to come. So,
wow, that's great. Well, the only reason I know that, I don't want to make people think I'm, you know, some kind of expert. But when I worked at Prudential Insurance Company, my boss was John Strangfeld, who eventually became the CEO of Prudential. But he had been posted in London for a number of years, and something to bond over with his son, he wanted to, you know, kind of get involved in horseback riding. And it turned out that his son wasn't that interested in it, but he actually became really passionate about it. And so when they moved back to the States, they moved to Bernardsville so that he could pursue that. So that's the only reason I know anything about that. So, but that's wonderful.
Yeah, it was when I grew up there, it was before 78 was completed, Route 78 was completed. So it was still very agricultural. And my parents had lived in New York before that. But when my older sister was born, they needed more space. And my father's industry, which was the fragrance industry, actually has a huge headquarters in New Jersey. So for many reasons, they decided that New Jersey was the best place to raise their family and for him to have his career so that he was closer to home and could be part of that as we were all growing up.
Well, that's incredible. I did not know that your father was a perfumer. That is such an interesting background. And how has that had any influence on you? Do you particularly love perfume? Are you very attuned to scents?
It's funny, as a child growing up, he would come home with samples in his suitcase of different compounds and different fragrances that they were working on for different clients. And so he would bring them all out and line them up on the counter and have the three girls kind of test them and say, which one do you like the best? And this is green and this is mossy and this is, you know, all different things. So we did learn a lot. And my older sister actually for a while did pursue a career in fragrance, but then she ended up becoming a lawyer. But I do think we're all very aware of the industry and very aware of what goes into smells and actually taste, because often a lot of the same essential oils that are used in both. So it was a great career. And as children, we always looked forward to him coming home. I remember one day he brought home, they were trying to figure out how to make chocolate chewing gum, and the compounds just wouldn't hold the base. And so he had three different compounds with the same flavor, and we each got a piece to chew. And so about 3 minutes into chewing, you know, mine hit a certain temperature and just disintegrated in my mouth. Hot chocolate is not meant to be a gum.
Wow. Oh, that is amazing. Well, you know, I mean, I know a number of private equity firms have actually invested in that space. Yeah. I don't know, perhaps your father's company. I remember as an investor in Jordan Company, they were active investors in the space. So, well, that's fascinating and very unique. And as well as your sister's career going from fragrance to law, that's not an intuitive leap, no. But I love that. So given that background and that upbringing, what was your first job growing up? Did you have a job as a teenager?
I sure did. So my love of horses was something that brought me to my first job, was working in a barn to help pay for my horses or to pay for my riding lessons. Because at that time, I guess I had just gotten my first horse, but I definitely learned a lot by looking after them. And I think part of that experience, you know, it teaches you responsibility and grit and, you know, real dedication. And so that was something that, whilst I was fortunate to be able to have that experience as a child, it was one that I definitely earned also. So, and I think that was important for my parents to make sure that I appreciated that the ability to have a horse and ride. And it's actually something to this day, you know, my daughter, she's 12 years old now, and her first summer job last summer was in the barns looking after the horses. And, you know, everything from feeding to turning out, watering, mucking, and grooming them, you know, and really looking after them, they always come first before yourself. So I think it's a good lesson, and it's a great activity and sport, especially for women, because you actually compete against men. It's one of the few Olympic sports that you actually, men and women compete in the same competition. So it definitely gives you a lot of grit.
And I would imagine it gives you a lot of confidence, particularly as a young person. But I also, you know, I see the parallel because, again, as you say, learning to care for these animals who are so extraordinary and majestic. It's, I guess, in many ways, it's a great equalizer, learning to do that. It can be very humbling, even though it can be viewed as an elite sport. I think for anybody who really cares for the animal, they want to understand all aspects of how to care for the animal. So I agree with you. I think that's a pretty unique first job to have.
Yeah. Even this summer, the woman that helps with our barn at home, she ended up getting a kidney stone. And so I get a text at 4:30, 5 a.m. She's in the hospital, and it says, you know, Elizabeth, you have to deal with the, you know, you have to get the horses in and watered and fed. Katie is in the hospital. And I woke up, I'm like, oh my God, I haven't mucked a stall in like 20 years. I had no idea what they ate. I had nothing. So I waited till, you know, 6:30 a.m. and I woke my daughter up, who had then just turned 12. And I was like, Ainsley, you know, we have to do this. And she's like, don't worry, Mom, we've got this. And here is this just turned 12. And she's, you know, leading in these ton and a half animals, feeding, knowing what medicines they get. I mean, just the responsibility and the stamina. It was August and, you know, 90 degrees out and she's mucking and I was helping. So it is an equalizer. It really, all age and everything, because we did that for about 10 days. Thank goodness Katie recovered fully, but it was actually two kidney stones back to back. So it was much worse than what we initially thought. And we did get someone to help out because it was quite a lot of work.
Oh my gosh. Wow. Yeah. But that's great that your daughter felt confident, said, "We got this, Mom."
Yeah.
And you did that together. I mean, I love the whole story.
Yeah.
Except for poor Katie having the kidney stones.
It's so tough.
That part's terrible.
Yeah,
but so how did your education and kind of your career path lead you to investments, in particular private equity?
So it's funny, in the sixth or seventh grade, I can't remember if it was sixth or seventh, we had a math class where we were learning fractions. And this definitely gives away my age a bit because they still quoted stocks in fractions. So everyone in the class was told to pick a stock. And we, over the course of that term, which was probably 3 months, we tracked our stocks and we plotted them and did, you know, calculating fractions. And I'm not sure where I got my stock. It was probably from my father, even though he's a perfumer. And so I started tracking this stock and it went off the charts. Like literally, they had to add graphic, you know, paper to this, charting paper to this. And I just remember thinking, gosh, you know, this is so successful and this was so easy. Well, I know it's not easy today, but it definitely was the first moment where I thought, like, this is interesting. And so then I went on and I was the middle child, you know, one older sister, one younger sister, and I was fiercely independent. And I really I wanted to go to boarding school. And my parents, having not been, you know, they had never gone to boarding school and not many friends of mine were going. And so anyhow, I finally convinced them to let me go. But they said, well, you it can only be an all girls boarding school. I said, okay, fine. So I went to the Madeira School in McLean, Virginia, and there it's an all-girls school, and their mission is launching women who lead, who change the world. That's what it is, launching women who change the world. And I wasn't a great student before I went to Madeira, I'll be honest. I was really great at math, and I loved science, but I was not a linguist. I was not a creative writer. I just struggled with that aspect of learning. And so Madeira said, well, you're obviously really good at math and science, so let's support that. And this whole like Spanish and French, which you're just absolutely struggling. I couldn't do it. They're like, don't worry about that. So all of a sudden they're supporting those things that I'm thriving at and not really worrying about the areas that I really struggled with. And all of a sudden, my confidence went up, my learning ability went up, my grades went up, everything went up. It was an amazing experience. And it truly turned me into the woman that I became. It gave me resilience and strength and confidence and a wonderful group of friends. So that led me then to go ultimately study economics at the University of St. Andrews in Scotland, where I studied economics. I was one of two women in a class of 57. So there were 55 men and two women. And, you know, I had been at an all-girls school. And then I was basically, you know, the minority massively. And so I got to St. Andrews and the professor, in kind of a Scottish brogue that I could barely understand, said, "What are you doing here? You know, you're American and you're a woman." So I'm not sure which was worse in his opinion. I said to him, like, that's exactly why I'm here. This is going to be fun. And it was fun. It was a great experience, a wonderful education. I'm sure I caused most of my professors, you know, more hassle than they were prepared for. But it was a wonderful place to study and to learn. And so I met my husband there. He was doing the classics, so he wasn't in my economics group, but it was a really terrific, terrific place. So then when I came back to the US, you know, no one then really appreciated the University of St. Andrews. And now thank you to Kate and and Prince William for going there. And it's now ranked, you know, right up there with Oxford and Cambridge, where it belongs. It's a really fantastic institution. But then no one really knew about it. And so I came back and I knew by that point that I wanted to be in finance. I enjoyed economics. And again, it was like I was good at it. And so long story short, my first working job was at the U.S. Trust in their high net worth client group, which I got through a headhunter because no one else, you know, no one knew where I had worked and what I had done. And so fortunately, a Madeira alum that I met at a networking group, and kind of this is where mentorship comes in. I didn't know her. She didn't know me, but we were both Madeira alums. And I was a first year in New York, first year working at this company. And she just took me under her wing and she said, Elizabeth, a friend of mine, he has this fund, this company called the Tory Funds. They're looking for an analyst. So go meet with them. So I did. And lo and behold, they were looking for an analyst and I was there and they hired me. And it was just a wonderful learning experience. It was a small team and we were creating one of the first hedge fund of funds. Well, that he had created it. It started in the 80s, 1986. And then I joined it. But at that point, it was really starting to grow. And this was probably in, I think it was 1990, late 90s, probably 98 or 99. And so I learned meeting with managers, manager after manager after manager. And Jim Torrey and Ezra Mager, two fantastic mentors. They both had daughters. They both really appreciated and respected women. And I was so lucky because I know not all women have that experience. And then from there, I was headhunted by Lazard Asset Management to help build their asset allocation business, again, in the hedge fund space. And again, with three male MDs. Once again, either their wives were primary earners or they had daughters or both. And that I can't remember who first gave me the advice, and I got it years and years ago. But if you're working with men, if they have a wife who's a primary earner or a daughter or both, they see you as equals. And it was one of the best, again, fortunate events because they were wonderful bosses and mentors. And we built a very successful business at Lazard, which ultimately then led me to Robert Wood Johnson, where I spent 10 years working under Brian O'Neill, who's the CIO. And again, another wonderful mentor. So I think mentorship can't be underestimated. And I owe so much to that throughout my career.
Well, that initial example you gave of the woman who had gone to Madeira resonates because to me, it sounds very much like the importance of having a network of women.
Yes.
who watch out for you and who celebrate you and who look for opportunities for you. And not that men don't do that. I think you've identified a number of them. But I think this unique ability to create a network and find that point of commonality where people start to first welcome you in, and then once they get to know you, they're actually looking for opportunities for you as well.
Absolutely. And I've been fortunate to help some younger women and do the same thing for them. And it was interesting. You know, one of them, she wasn't in investments long, and she was an analyst that I had along the way, and she had been an editor. And when I interviewed her, I mean, her skills were just she was so sharp and so smart. And I'm like, you will be great at this. And it was funny because she had never had that mentorship before. And she was so grateful that a woman would help her out that much. And it really kind of made me really, the fact that she hadn't had a mentorship up until a mentor until that point, it really made me stress the importance to me to give back and to make sure that I mentor as well, because I did have these wonderful mentors who are still friends today. And you're absolutely right. Like building that network and maintaining that network and growing that network has been a huge advantage.
We would like to take a brief break to thank PEWIN's founding partner, KPMG, as well as our gold partners, Asia Alternatives, Dukas Linden Public Relations, Kane Anderson, Kirkland & Ellis, Proskauer, Silver Lake, Thoma Bravo, and TPG. If you are interested in sponsorship opportunities, please contact us at info@pewin.org. Now back to our episode.
So you mentioned your transition over to Robert Wood Johnson, which obviously you started doing more on the private equity side when you were there. You know, are there specific inflection points that you point to that helped you move not just into the investment industry, but actually to start to move into the more senior ranks of the industry? Were there things you did, you know, mentors you had, career paths you were looking for that helped you do that?
I think it was really when I became CIO at Alfred P. Sloan that I felt that network kick in. Honestly, when I moved to Robert Wood Johnson, it was a very small team and it was very early days of diversifying that portfolio. So there were only four of us who Brian O'Neill and then two other directors and myself. And in those days, we were a tiny team and we were just working really hard to diversify that portfolio away from, as it was a stock specific portfolio. And then we had some fund of funds. And so it was very much on my own. And it probably wasn't until when I had my daughter that there was more support because they did not want me to leave by that point. And having been really on the hedge fund side, I had a lot of hedge fund expertise, but the whole credit, long only, fixed income, I learned that really at Robert Wood Johnson. And so when I had my daughter, I was offered the option of going part-time. And that was the first time where I really felt like I wasn't planning to go part-time, but that was an idea that, well, we want to keep her. So maybe they were worried I was going to leave. So if we get her part-time, at least we still keep her. But in my mind, you know, I had another individual ask me, you know, or say, oh, you're really going to miss your job when you have your child. I said, why? Like, I'm not leaving. And so it was funny. It was the first time I ever really saw myself through a different lens that other people were seeing me through, which I didn't really see myself. I never was going to stop working because I'd seen how hard my mom worked to get her education. I had some other friends' parents. One was a widower and she was amazing and she worked so hard and put three kids through school and just these incredible leaders, I guess, and really strong women that I grew up around. So it never even crossed my mind to give up my job once I had my daughter. So another woman, actually, it may have been my same original mentor. She's like, don't go part-time because you'll end up doing just the same amount of work and you'll get half the pay. And so I had never thought I would go half part-time. And so I just leaned on in. And the best part of Robert Wood Johnson was everyone had Fridays, remote Fridays. So we had work from home Fridays, regardless if you had children or not, if you're a man or a woman, it didn't matter. And I will tell you, having that flexibility then definitely gave me the ability to keep my job and to thrive in it. And it gave me the flexibility and the desire to stay there. And it was a great 10 years. But it was really my move to Sloan where I felt my greater network of women really kick in. And I was hired as CIO, and that portfolio really needed to be completely rebuilt, and the team needed to be rebuilt. The investment process and asset allocation had to be rebuilt. And I was fortunate. I was hired under a really wonderful president, Paul Joskow, and he gave me the latitude to add to the investment committee, which Kelly is part of. And I was able to add another woman onto that committee. And all of a sudden, what had been a heavy majority male committee, all of a sudden I had a diversified committee and really great mentors that made a huge difference in my career and my success, to be honest. So what was interesting, I had done all hedge funds and really public market investing, whether it was credit or fixed income or long only. And so it was only when I got to Sloan that I really ended up doing the deep dive into private equity. And at that point, what I didn't realize at that time was the portfolio that I had inherited, which had been a very successful private equity portfolio. The prior CIO had decided to reduce all equity exposure and so had sold off large pieces of this private equity portfolio. And so what was left when I got there were really the remains of what couldn't be sold. So I started meeting these managers and I'm thinking, gosh, why are we in this fund? And why are we in this fund? And so ultimately I talked to one of the secondary agents and they said, oh, we know that portfolio really well. That's, you know, that's what we couldn't sell because they would only sell at or above NAV. So all of these fantastic funds that we had were no longer in the portfolio. So long story short, we end up doing a secondary sale in 2017 or 2018. I think it was completed in 2018, which, you know, better lucky than smart. We sold all of our private China in that transaction and a few other pieces of funds that were there. And we got to rebuild a whole new portfolio. And that honestly has been one of the most enjoyable aspects of rebuilding Alfred P. Sloan's portfolio. With your help, we've had a number of female-led GPs in there. I think we probably have one of the most diversified portfolios as far as gender and minority representation, because we were building a portfolio at a time where there were just so many amazing female and minority managers out there. So that's been a really exciting part of our job. And now we're just about exiting our J curve. And it's been so rewarding to see the companies grow and the GPs grow and develop. And it's just been a great part of my job.
Yeah, it's been exciting for me to participate in that and watch you. And, you know, it occurs to me as you were telling the story about when you were about to have your daughter, I'm sure most people know the quote that most of the decisions about your career get made when you're not in the room. And so it's very often that conversations like that about women happen, and they often happen when there are no women in the room.
Right.
And I remember, you know, it was unique because I was the head of my business. I remember sitting around the table with a group of my senior team considering promotions, and there was a woman who was up for promotion who was expecting. And her supervisor said, well, you know, maybe we shouldn't waste a promotion on her since she's probably not coming back. And I said, are you kidding me? I said, look, if she's qualified for the promotion, we give her the promotion. It has nothing to do with whether she makes a decision to come back or not. And of course she did. I mean, I don't think anyone had had the conversation with her about it, but there's this presumption about women that happens where people assume, well, once you have children, you're not coming back. And I always say, in my entire career, which, you know, at this point has spanned a long time, I've never once met a woman who made the decision not to come back to work because she had children. More often than not, the decision not to come back is because she doesn't want to come back into the environment that exists at that firm. It's not about the fact that she's desperate to stay home and be a mother. It's that she can't imagine herself as a mother or as a parent coming back into the environment that exists. So you gave a great example of the fact that luckily at Robert Wood Johnson, it was a good environment because they did have flexible Fridays. I always felt very strongly for everybody on my team to give flexible work arrangements. And the only people who really ever used to take advantage of it were men. But I think ultimately it made everybody, you know, a better parent, a better partner, a better spouse, and that makes them happier and more productive at work. So, and that's well before the pandemic, right? This was a lesson you learned and I learned well before the pandemic. So I feel like everybody's kind of catching up. And I think also, you know, that your comment about the opportunity to take a mature portfolio, but also within that rebuild something. I mean, what you walked into was actually pretty unique.
Yeah. It was unique and in a way, you know, we had a portfolio, but it really needed to be it was like going into a garden, like an overgrown garden where you just have to rip some of the mature stuff out because it's just not allowing anything else to grow. But then you end up with this amazing, you know, amazing portfolio. So that's been a hugely rewarding time. I also think going back to kind of, you know, that hybrid or the flexibility, having flexibility. And, you know, one of the things I used to struggle with, because I was always the first in, the last out. And that's just my nature and my personality. And so I always did struggle with having that balance. And it wasn't really until, yes, those remote Fridays absolutely helped because it forced me to have some balance. But then, you know, COVID was the silver lining there, was that we all got to see how we could function in a hybrid structure. And so my husband, who works, you know, in a very male-dominated European bank setup, when they were calling everyone back to work, he's like, no, you know, and he was fortunate enough to get headhunted. And he said, I'm only going to move if this is hybrid, because I've done my job incredibly well for the last 2 years remotely. So why would I go back? Right. And what was best about that was that him being hybrid allows me flexibility. And so, mm-hmm. you know, if we are both hybrid, it enables us to be more balanced and to be healthier and to be happier and to have everything. And I remember sitting, it was at one of the PE Win conferences just after we all came back from it was one of the first in-person meetings that we had. And it was a panel, and one of the women said, you know, before COVID, I was on the verge of retiring. And now I could see myself working for another 20 years. And I was sitting in the audience and I'm like, I know exactly how she feels. Because now, you know, this is sustainable. I love what I do. And I love that I can see my daughter. I can take my dogs for a walk. I can see my husband and have a phenomenal career and work harder than ever and probably be more productive than ever, but have more balance. So that's the silver lining of, you know, of the last few years for me.
Yeah, I would agree. I mean, I think push for, you know, full time back in the office, trying to take us back to the old days. In many ways, it reinforces this idea of FaceTime.
Yeah.
And for those of us who grew up in that era, you realize how incredibly unproductive that environment was, because so much of it was spent doing BS stuff, having meetings you didn't need to have, standing in each other's offices talking about nonsense. Yeah. I mean, there just like was a lot of wasted time. And I think for a lot of people, maybe who don't have the work ethic or who aren't as good as their jobs as you are, I think maybe they long for those days, because you can get by doing that as long as your boss saw you in the office. And I still remember when I was a young associate at a law firm, you know, I'd leave like 10 o'clock at night, but the guy in the office next to me would stay all night. And our boss said to me, well, you know, he's staying all night and, you know, look at you, you're leaving. And I said, well, who's the better lawyer? The one who can get their work done by 10 o'clock or the one who has to stay all night? And it kind of put him back on his heels. But that's exactly what it was. This guy was sitting in his office smoking cigars and BSing with the other guys. And it was just a waste of time. And, you know, I actually wanted to go home and sleep in my own bed and see my husband. So I do hope, I really think that part of the COVID experience is a game changer for women.
Yeah.
In so many ways, because I think a lot of men got a chance to see what it's like.
Yeah,
to work, you know, to be a parent who has responsibility for children, what it's like to have your kids around and the challenge of doing that and expecting you to do your job and the caretaking.
Right.
But it also helps companies to recognize that you can still be incredibly productive and in some ways more productive if you have a more humane approach to the way you let your team do their jobs.
Yes. And I can't remember, it was either the New York Times or the Wall Street Journal, but one of them recently did a study and it said the higher productivity and higher driving employees are the ones that are leaving the full time back to work because they want flexibility because they get their work done. Like they are, and it was interesting. So those high achieving individuals are the ones, because they get their work done, to your point, right? We don't need to be sitting in an office to get our work done. It was a really interesting study.
Yeah, exactly. Well, so other than the example you gave about being suggested to go part-time, are there other times in your career you can think of when you were made particularly aware or self-conscious about the fact that you were a woman?
The most stark was when I had my daughter. I always have been fortunate to have bosses that have been so respectful. And I know I'm fortunate there because I know many women do not have that experience. There was one time, you know, I was at Lazard then, and I went with one of the MDs to Japan, and we got there, and I was attending a hedge fund conference that he was speaking at because he managed a direct portfolio at Lazard. And then after the conference, we did a few meetings, and it was just assumed I was his secretary. I haven't actually been back to Japan since. Maybe I'm due a trip because I'm sure they've modernized more than then, but it was just that assumption that an older man traveling with a younger woman, I was clearly his secretary. And that really rubbed me the wrong way. We still don't have a dedicated Japanese manager, probably for that reason.
Well, I mean, I have a funny story in that regard. I went to college in Japan, so I didn't really experience that as a student. But when I started practicing law, I ended up representing a lot of Japanese companies. And I was doing a deal, I won't say with whom, and they kept addressing correspondence. This is in the days when you got faxes, not emails, to Mr. Williams. And I was like, oh, you know, of course they're being sexist. And I just made all these assumptions. And then when I finally met them in person, they were very apologetic. And they explained to me that they had a book about English names, American names, and they looked it up. And my name, Kelly, is actually a man's name in Gaelic. And they actually had looked up the gender of my name. So they had actually done their diligence. And so it was very reasonable for them to make that assumption. So I realized, okay, I made an assumption about them, but they actually did the diligence.
That's
so
funny.
I did have to forgive them.
Well, I do think I'm probably due a trip to Japan at some point.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you'll find it has changed dramatically.
Yes.
So like most people, I mean, that who have been on the podcast, you've had an amazing career, lots of successes, but all of us can point to things that either were challenges, setbacks, failures, anything you point to that was a particular learning lesson, something that it looked bad at the time, but ended up providing a really unique learning lesson for you.
Well, the one kind of recent experience was when I joined Sloan, part of our portfolio was structured to be invested in credit, and it flexes between public and private, and it is mostly senior secured, but has a broad range of strategies. And some of that is callable capital. And so when the pandemic hit, we had a significant amount of intentionally committed callable capital, and it did get called quite aggressively, and we had plenty of liquidity to meet those calls. And that capital went into the ground, and the investment team was so excited because this is exactly why we'd set it up. We were getting, you know, spreads had really blown out and there was blood in the street and we were putting money to work. And so, you know, for us, it was really exciting. Well, 2 quarters later, it still hadn't marked. And you know, the people that we referred to really thought, like, what have you done? Because this is your performance looks terrible. And luckily, they had a long enough investment horizon to really, you know, it was that portfolio that actually reaped the best returns and provided the stability and the return during 2021 that enabled us to meet the needs of the foundation. And so I think being a long-term investor and not getting caught up in the short-term, either ups or downs, it's just really important. And that, I think, recommitted me to being, you know, always thinking of the long-term and again, like right now we're sitting in a moment where, you know, the Fabulous Four we're down to instead of the, you know, the whatever they were, the
Fang.
Yeah, the Fang or the Magnificent Seven or whatever they were calling them. Now it's like the Fabulous Four because they keep dropping off. I think, again, like NVIDIA is, the third largest company. I mean, it's nuts. It makes chips. It makes good chips. But there are other companies out there that are nipping at their heels with better, faster chips. And they're tiny companies still, but the innovation's out there. And the other thing I really learned is just the speed of technology. Never underestimate the speed of technology. So today, the thing that goes alongside with this is just don't chase returns, right? Be balanced. That's my best advice. First, if you're going to work with men, make sure they've had either daughters or wives that are equal earners. And secondly, don't chase returns and be a long-term investor. And I think, those things absolutely will pay off in the long run.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. I think that's absolutely very true. So now I want to turn to a fun part of our podcast, which is our lightning round. I'm going to ask you some questions and just sort of tell me what comes to mind. And my first question is, what's a great book you've read or listened to recently?
So the ski season has just ended and my daughter had to read an autobiography. And so she wanted to read Lindsay Vonn's. And I thought, I'm going to read that first, because I have no idea what a World Cup skier's autobiography is going to be like. And so that's my most recent book. And it was actually really interesting to hear about, her record as the leading downhill female race skier. She has an amazing track record. And so that was my non-work. And then the other book I read recently was Chris Miller's Chip 4, and that's a good one. Yeah, that's worth reading. So two very different books.
Yeah, very different, but good recommendations. So what's your cell phone wallpaper?
That would be my husband, my daughter, and one of our dogs. We have four dogs. So that's my current one. That changes occasionally too, but usually it involves the same lineup.
So if you had a career other than investments, what would it be?
I probably would have been a veterinarian. And I actually wanted to. It's just when I just ended up following the financial, and that was a turning point. It was, that job at US Trust. If I hadn't gotten that, I probably would have gone back and done some medical school to go to be a vet.
Well, I think I know the answer to the next question, which is, are you a dog or a cat person?
Well, I would say I'm an all animal person, but if I had to choose between a dog or a cat, I'm going dog with my four dogs.
With your four dogs. That's what I figured.
One cat, four dogs.
Okay, there is a cat in there.
Yeah.
I'm both. I like cats and dogs. Yeah. I'm with you. So what's the best piece of advice you've ever been given?
Well, I gave it before. It's really that, it being balanced, I think is in your approach to life and your approach to portfolio management, and it's just finding a balance would be my best advice that I can give. And keep mentor and accept mentorship. Be willing to take advice and always, if you can help someone in their career early, then it makes a world of difference to everyone. So those are the things I really try to do myself.
Yeah, I would agree. I reap rewards all the time from the people that I've mentored throughout my career. And so lastly, what's something we don't know about you yet?
One of my four dogs is a show dog, and we're going to Westminster on May 14th.
Wow.
Yeah.
Oh my gosh.
Yep.
That's so cool.
It's funny.
So is it real? Is it really like Best in Show?
It is exactly like Best in Show. It that movie nails it. I mean, it's the most eclectic group of people from all walks of life, from all, from every corner of the country, and sometimes internationally, from people flying in dogs on their own jets to the RVs rolling up. I mean, it really truly and just everyone loves their dogs. So they're all a little crazy. but it's funny. So we will be at Westminster Tuesday, May 14th.
Okay. Well, we'll be watching for you. Now, what kind of dog is it?
He's a Sussex Spaniel called Chip.
Called Chip. Oh, Lex, no wonder you like the Chip book.
Yeah. Lex Fields Chipperoo.
Oh, wow. Oh, I love that. That's a good one. Well, Elizabeth Hewitt, you have been, as I expected, a delight. I had a great conversation with you today. Can't wait to have you back. Thank you for being on Moments That Made Her.
Well, thank you, Kelly, for having me. It's been a real pleasure. And I love the PE win, and you're just a super wonderful mentor. So I'm really grateful.
Thank you.
Thank you for joining us for today's episode of Moments That Made Her. I'm Scotty Wardell, co-chair of the PE Win Communications Committee. As a reminder, the content in this recording is for general information purposes only and does not constitute advice. We give no assurance or warranty regarding accuracy, timeliness, or applicability of any of the contents of this recording. This recording is provided as is, and PE Win expressly disclaims any and all warranties expressed or implied to the extent permitted by law. Except where acknowledged, the copyright and all intellectual property rights in all material in this recording are owned by PE Win and our affiliates and should not be reproduced without our prior written consent. Other organizations or brand names used within this recording are for identification purposes only. The content set forth in this recording may not be sold, reproduced, or distributed without PE Win's prior written consent. Any third-party trademarks, service marks, and logos are the property of their respective owners. Any further rights not specifically granted herein are reserved. Thank you again for joining us today, and we hope you tune in for another episode soon.